to the In Touch Mission International podcast. I'm Summer Kelly, and I'll be your host for this show, where I'll be interviewing ITMI partners and giving the world a chance to hear directly from them, to be inspired by what God is doing in their lives and their ministries and their hearts. I am super excited to bring you the opportunity to connect with them in this new format. In Touch Mission International is a nonprofit mission organization that serves and empowers godly national believers. We look for people who are ministering faithfully in their countries, and we seek to multiply their reach by telling the world their stories. I want to tell you just a little bit about me so that when you hear my voice, you know something about who you're listening to. Telling stories from ITMI partners has been part of my life for quite a few years. I actually started at ITMI back in 2005 in an administrative role, and I had just gotten married to my wonderful husband, Dennis. And now, in addition to being a wife and a writer, I'm mom to three school-aged kiddos. And basically, when I'm not writing or cooking or doing laundry, I'm hanging out with them. In today's episode, I got the opportunity to have an inspiring conversation with ITMI's Ashley Keller. Ashley and her husband Timothy live and minister in Kabwe, Zambia, and they have an incredible ministry that I cannot wait for you to hear about. So let's get straight to my conversation with Ashley. Privilege to sit down and chat with you. You have such a unique perspective to share, but first, maybe just briefly tell us about the ministry you and Tim are involved in Zambia.
Well, my husband Tim and I have been missionaries in Africa for 13 years together, and he was in the field for almost 10 years before that. Our ministry has had a lot of different ways that it developed. You know, we've done the big groups, we've done the small groups, and it's just amazing to see how God can take what you have to offer and use you where you are. At the moment, we're doing a lot of work with the local police. Tim's passion is definitely in leadership development and bringing discipleship to people who have a lot of influence in their community, because there's so much more effective when the gospel and when discipleship is coming from within a community rather than just from the outside. And that's kind of become his passion, is to bring discipleship to people who can become disciplers within their community. Outside of that, we do all the normal missionary things. You know, we help with churches and schools and orphanages and help other missionaries do what they're doing better or just be an extra set of hands. And it's really one of those amazing journeys where God can use whatever you have to give. Whenever you're willing to give it. Sometimes even if you're not willing to give it. He can really use you powerfully if you're just willing to say, okay.
And one thing you and Tim have said okay to is the sacrifice that it takes for him to make these treks to the rural villages. And I can only imagine that that comes with some very inspiring and very exciting stories of what God is doing in those villages. So I wanted to give you the opportunity to share some of those.
Yeah, rural remote ministry has always been his passion. It's so interesting traveling to the rural areas, because as you approach a village, you get that pastoral postcard scene that everybody has its screensavers on their computers. You know, you've got the beautiful tall African grass, and you've got these amazing rustic looking huts and a beautiful sunset and the big African trees. And, you know, if you're really remote, you've even got the giraffe in the background sometimes. You know, it's this amazing picture. And then you walk into the village and there's people. And when there's people, there's sin and problems. And in Africa, that's poverty and disease and widespread domestic violence, pretty severe, horrific domestic violence. And it's a pretty place to work. That's also a very ugly place to work. And it's funny how the way the earth has developed that you get those two things in the same place, this amazing environmental beauty and these very deep, very ugly problems of sin. And there's just so many opportunities. There's so many ways to help. You know, on the practical level, you've got starving children and widespread HIV/AIDS and the problems that come with that. No drinking water. ITMI has helped us bring wells, and I think John Leach also does wells, where you're bringing it into a community that people are dying from crocodile attacks or from amoebic infections or from dehydration because they just simply don't have clean water. And I think that's one of the things that we love doing in the communities is making it possible for them to live well. You know, the gospel is life-changing and it brings life and joy to your heart. But if your children are dying of dehydration, if your family is embroiled in generations of domestic violence, the gospel brings you hope, but you need help turning it into change. And that's a lot of what we hope God can use us to do with our partners, is helping them grow in their walk with the Lord so they can impact their communities. And one of the most common questions I get is, do you see change? And we definitely do. That's one of the amazing things with, you know, Tim has been working with some of these people for 20 years. And we all change, thankfully. God doesn't leave us as we are. We all change over time. And there's several communities that I'm thinking of now where it started out being that ugly picture. And now we see some of these men and women as partners alongside of us. You know, they're no longer the people that we're ministering to. As a matter of fact, we've had them come to minister to us and say, we see that you're struggling with this, or we see that, you know, you guys need to talk about these things. And they're bringing ministry into our lives. And at first it was surprising. You know, we're used to being the ones who are ministering to, but then it was one of the most deeply moving things I've ever experienced to see that God had given us the privilege of raising up ministers and missionaries alongside of us. And that's really our ultimate goal in conjunction with ITMI, is to see the local church, the national church, become so strong and so deeply knitted together in the community of Christ that they're not reliant on an American missionary. You know, that we bring something to the table for them with God's grace, but that we are, in the end, fortifying, building, and strengthening the Zambian church, not building the Keller church. And that's something that we have seen over the years, a lot of success in rural and remote areas, of just being able to be God's hands and feet to bring real practical discipleship and community change.
So what does discipleship look like in that context? I know you have two, you have the rural context, but then there's also what you're doing in your own city of Kabwe. So I know you maybe have two answers, but what does that look like?
Tim and I do discipleship in very different ways. His is really far more interesting than what I do. But a lot of what he's doing is leadership development. So he'll sit down with the police or with, they call it Pastors Fraternal in Zambia, basically a group of pastors that have gotten together to do a project, or with representatives of a denomination or something like that. And a lot of times he comes with a plan, you know, sort of an outline of thinking, we're going to talk about how to deal with counseling, or we're going to talk about how to bring your congregation into tithing or supporting the church, or, you know, a lot of very practical things that pastors need to know. But it's actually quite normal for things to skid off of what he has planned and turn into a lot of discipleship. You know, there's everywhere you go in the world, there's jealousy and envy and greed and all the many sins of this life. And in Zambia, they don't have the same resources that we do. You know, there's not big counseling groups. There's not a cultural awareness of what is corruption, what is sexual sin, how important is my family in the big picture. And it comes out in quite extreme ways in Africa. You know, it's not someone who's sidelined their family. It's someone who's not making sure that their kids eat, but they're leading a church and going off into those issues. And, you know, the HIV/AIDS problem is real, and you'll get pastors who are living lifestyles that are perpetuating disease in their congregations, and then they're preaching the gospel. And it's very practical issues that end up being a spiritual problem and lead into discipleship, you know, and questions that people ask. And in the beginning, you feel like it's a very practical question. How do I deal with domestic abuse in my congregation? Well, you've got to work through what is domestic abuse, because in the rural African context, what we see as abuse, they see as very normal and acceptable. And telling them, this is not about your perception and my perception. This is about love is patient, love is kind, and showing them the plan God has, regardless of race, creed, religion. God has love and grace for all of us, and how that plays out practically beyond saying, I'm a Christian. I would love to say we do it well every time, but counseling is definitely a big challenge. You know, people throw questions at you, and sometimes you just have to say, let's pray about it. Let's read the scripture. Fortunately, we've got a big network of pastors and very wise people that help us, that we can email and say, hey, this came up. How do you deal with this with somebody? And we're very thankful for the support that we get kind of from the larger global body of Christ, that we're there in the field in Zambia, but we're not alone. You know, there's so many people holding up our arms when we need to be there for others. So that's amazing.
What have been some learning experiences for you over your time in Africa? You know, as you're talking about some of those discipleship things and not knowing, you know, what to do, what are some of the main things that you can, you know, look back on and say, oh, like this is something I've learned?
I think probably for me, learning to show compassion has been a learning experience. When I first went to the mission field, I had this very particular picture of what that would look like. And, you know, I think most of us go into our careers that way. We think we know what we're doing, and we're actually completely clueless. And realizing very quickly that my personality didn't fit the person who I wanted to be. And that was very hard for me to recognize. I wanted to be this great, cool, amazing missionary person, and that's who I thought missionaries were. And then discovering I don't have the loud stage personality. I don't have a lot of confidence for going up to people I don't know and sharing the gospel. And I'm not very brave, and I like creature comforts. And I'm there in Africa and figuring out, okay, God, I definitely know you brought me here, but I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do. And I feel like God's led me on a journey of saying, you know, I came to serve. I came to do. I came to give. That was my plan. And realizing that God has so many amazing people in Zambia, that they've had a completely different walk than I do, and God's given them a ministry to give. And learning to receive discipleship, learning to receive parenting advice, learning to receive love and grace. And if there's one thing that the Zambians are so good at doing, it's extending grace, which is good because it's so easy to sort of culturally offend. You know, their culture is very different from ours, especially on social levels. And God has given them culturally the capacity for grace. And I think something that we learn in Western cultures have very high standards for each other. And you know, America is a fairly judgy culture. And I say that as an American, acknowledging that I'm part of that culture. And we make decisions, and then we want to make a plan, and we want to enact the plan, and we want to fix the problem and move forward. And I feel like one of the things that I've learned as a missionary in Zambia is God is so much bigger than that. You know, he's doing something here right in front of us with other people. It's not just about us, it's about a community, and there's give and take, and sometimes I'm wrong and sometimes they're wrong. And a lot of times I'm realizing it's not about who's right or wrong. It's about what God is doing with his people. It's about the journey. It's not about what project, what well, what discipleship resource. It's about God working within his body. And I feel like the Zambians have so much to give to the body of Christ and to teach us about grace and love and acceptance of each other. that has a dark side and how accepting they are of a lot of sin issues and cultural problems. And that's where, you know, the two meet in the middle, that we're trying to fix things that need to be fixed, and they're trying to have love and grace and understanding. And it's, you know, you'd think it would be easy to make those two things work together. It's, unfortunately, it's not always. But again, that's, I'm realizing that's part of the journey. And when I want to force something through, it's almost inevitable that what God's trying to do is something between people, not an end project. And when the people start working together and showing love and grace, that's when God can get something done.
Yeah, I really can identify with envisioning it going one way and then just it not going that way, and it's like God's really good at bringing you to the end of yourself so that
yeah.
He can do something better.
Yeah, that's probably part of being a mom, isn't it? If there's one thing we know, it's that we have plan A, B, C, D, and E. And inevitably, in 20 minutes, you work all your way through those plans, and you got nothing left. And your kids still need you, and you still have to do the chores and get everything ready for the next day, and you're done. I think becoming a mom is probably the best thing that ever happened to me being able to be a missionary, because I can practice on my kids.
That's beautiful. Yes. And if it doesn't work out, it's fine.
They have to love me anyway. Well, I guess they don't, but somehow they do. So
that has always been something that's amazed me, how patient and forgiving my kids are towards
for
me.
Real.
I'll just, yeah, something really ugly and then, oh, I love you, Mom. And
yeah. Why?
Really, yeah. Why? Why would you? But I think that's just, yeah, that's God's gift to us.
Yeah.
What ways has the Lord opened the door for you to share Him with people other than your kids?
A lot of my life right now revolves around my home. And I've got 4 kids. They're all homeschooled. Well, Ian's 3, but he's at home. And the other ones are schooling. I don't get out very much. So for quite a while, I was asking God, like, you sent me here to be a missionary. And quite frankly, I'm wiping a lot of bumps. Like, it does not feel like making a difference for the kingdom. But that was a season, you know, that I had 3 kids in 4 years. And that was a lot of diapers and a lot of temper tantrums and so on, and that season brought. And I very much seen, as my kids were getting older, and I felt like I should be going out and finding ministry. And I don't know why we do that to ourselves as moms. I don't think there's a mom I've met who doesn't have a list of should be doing. I should be doing this. And most of the time, I think we're looking out here when God's got something right here for us to be doing. And somehow that's just not as interesting as everything that we see out there. And but I really wanted some way of investing in the culture. You know, I'm living 9,000 miles away from my birth country. I've left my family. I've brought my kids here to do ministry. Please, can't you find something for me to give to this culture? And what God started doing is sending people to my kitchen. Tim does a lot of traveling, and he's got some dietary constraints, so I bake a lot of food, muffins and, you know, sausage rolls and just all kinds of different things that he travels with. And as he's been traveling, people are saying, what is this that you're eating? You know, it's so good. I've never tried it before. Or, and he's been telling them about his diet, which really from an American context, it's not a fancy diet. He needs to eat a lot of protein. He needs to eat a lot of vegetables. You know, he needs to be eating healthy, balanced meals for him to be able to function. I think most of us can say that. Well, in the African context, convenience foods are just coming into their culture, and it's very, very cheap. You know, they do not have the food standards that America has. So you've got people buying potato chips and candy bars and that kind of thing. It's very expensive for them, even though it's cheap compared to our standards of what we would pay. So they're spending a lot of cash on total junk food, and you know, they're traveling with it and they're tired and they're starting to have problems like blood pressure and diabetes and all those things that come with junk food. And so he's able to explain, like, well, you know, I've had a malaria a lot of times and my body doesn't have very much tolerance for much of anything, so my wife cooks food for me to travel with. And then they filter back to me and say, what is this about protein? What is this about baking? I want to learn how to bake. I love muffins. I love cake. Like, teach me something. And at first I kind of blew it off like, oh, sure, I'll teach you how to make a birthday cake. And it turned into a steady stream of women that come through my kitchen, and a lot of them come for the fun things that we all, you know, everybody wants to learn how to make a chocolate chip muffin. It's just something, especially as women, we want to know how to make.
Absolutely.
Turning it into a teaching opportunity for them because, you know, Africa is sort of notorious for not having great nutritional standards. And some of that is what food is available, but a lot of it is a lack of education. And that it's actually been an opportunity to teach other moms how to bring protein and vegetables and vitamins and good healthy foods into their kids' diet, and teaching them how important that is. That, you know, if you totally skip breakfast, or if you send your kids with a 50-cent packet of what amounts to Cheetos for breakfast, they're not going to do well in school. They're going to be discouraged. They're, you know, they're going to stop with a fifth grade education. It's this great big snowball that goes downhill. And it's just part of our American culture here. Everybody knows that kids need 3 or 4 square meals a day, and they need protein, and they need fruits and vegetables. It's just not part of their culture there. So what started as like, sure, I'll teach you how to make muffins, turned into a big discipleship ministry. Well, I say big. It's not big, but
it's
a
important
ministry that I can do. It doesn't actually take a lot of my time. And as a mom, I don't have a lot of time, but I can take a couple of hours to teach people a skill. And while we're there sitting and waiting for things to bake or bread to rise or whatever, we talk about what all moms talk about: our kids, our husbands, the problems in our lives. And it's amazing how it just becomes a conversation. You know, I've got things to share with them about my life, and they've got things to share with me about their lives. And it's a very natural and organic way to bring Christ into the kitchen, and into places where we don't normally go looking for Jesus. And as women, I think those are the places we need to find our salvation, is in all those little jobs that we just have to do as women, as moms, and to be able to share that with other women and learn from each other has been really, really incredible.
I want to go back to when you were saying it felt like, I can't remember exactly what you said, but, you know, I'm here in Zambia, I'm sent to be a missionary, and I'm, you know, changing diapers and making meals, and that's all that I'm doing. And, you know, as I hear that a lot here, that especially with young moms, just feeling like I'm supposed to be doing X, Y, Z, and here I am, I'm doing this, and I cannot, you know, I don't have any extra time after all of the mom chores. How spiritually did you wrestle through that?
Probably with way more muscle and way less spirituality than it should have been. I think those mom days can be dark. I'm sure dads can say the same thing, but I can't relate to that because I'm not a dad. But I think God has a lot of patience and grace for us. You know, I had very closely spaced kids. It's just worked out that way. And I think we all have mom regrets that you look back and say, I wish I had known, or I wish I hadn't. And we can grow and become better as we learn from that. There's an extent to which we can share that with others. But what I hope for myself is that in looking back, I learn to extend grace to others when they need it. That to be more aware of that mom who's really just struggling and really... You know, you can tell by the mom hair and the bags under her eyes and the disgruntled looks from her kids that this person needs help right now. This person needs grace. And I was blessed to have a lot of people, even, you know, way out in the middle of nowhere, Africa, Zambians and other missionaries and different people who were able to reach out and say, it's okay to not be enough. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to want more. you got to work through it, but you don't have to pretend everything is fine. And I very much needed that. I'm a processor. I needed to process through the fact that this was difficult. You know, now my kids are older and it's a whole new different kind of difficult. Our oldest daughter has some special learning problems, and you know, I've got a 10-year-old on one side and a 3-year-old on the other, and we're dealing with the beginning of the teenage years. You know, I think your kids are kind of in the same boat, more or less, and it's, I feel like it's a big learning curve and a whole new variety of frustrations. You know, I'm not frustrated anymore because I'm being woken up at 11 and 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 a.m. I get to sleep most nights now, which is amazing.
Amen.
But I'll realize that, oh, my kid's angry with me. And actually, now I think about it, I think she's been angry at me for 2 or 3 days. I must have done something really bad. And you know, what 10-year-old wants to talk to their mom about why they're mad? No 10-year-old I've ever met. And that's a huge challenge for me to think, okay, now my children are not just things that I have to feed and love. You know, they're people with hearts and souls that are on their own development and discipleship track. And it's sometimes confusing for me to walk that road between, you know, prophet, priest, and king and figure out, who am I today? Am I your best friend or your worst enemy? And what does that mean for our relationship today?
So you guys are planning to, or working towards relocating, same city, but tell us a little bit about the vision there and what's going on with that.
Right now we live on the edge of town. When we moved there, it was literally the edge of town. Like, you walked out of our gate and there was nothing as far as the eye could see. And we settled there and we said, wow, what an amazing place to raise kids. And it has been. We've been there for 6 years or 7 years now, I think, in that house. And it was an amazing place to raise small kids. We've got a pretty big walled yard. With a lot of trees for them to climb and space to play in. From a 3-year-old, 5-year-old standpoint. Well, over the intervening years, sort of a shanty town has grown up around us, all the way around us, and what used to be a beautiful family-friendly area is now actually has a very serious crime problem. We used to say it's not safe for our kids to ride their bikes out on the street alone, and that was unfortunate, but you know, there's other neighborhoods that are like that. Now there's a lot of times where I will go out with them and end up bringing them back because I don't feel like it's safe even with me out there. That there's just a very dominant criminal element in our area. Hmm. And that it's difficult to raise kids in that situation. And I would never want to sacrifice my kids' well-being for the ministry. You know, Tim's ministry is very mobile. A lot of what he does is travel to remote places to bring ministry there. So to move 5 miles across town really has zero impact on his ministry. It's going to be incredibly good for our kids. It's a farming area where they're going to be able to build relationships with the other Zambian kids that are around. They're going to be able to ride their bikes and go for walks without mom, to thrill them. And it will give our family a much healthier way of existing. And, well, I don't even want to say existing. We'll actually be able to thrive there. Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel like certain aspects of our kids' lives right now are not thriving. You know, kids need to be out making friends without mom leaning over their shoulder. They need to go out bike riding and be able to hike up and down their street and do normal kid things. And I can see as our kids get older that there's almost a bitterness struggle there, that they want some freedom, and it's really just not safe in our neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And we're just interested to see how God develops this. We own the property. We've got some money to start up and get a road in and get the well put in. And at some point, we're going to be fundraising for the house, and we'll just have to see how God orchestrates all those things. But I feel like I'm already watching God put his chess pieces where he wants them, and realizing, you know, I've been asking God for ministry, and it's got to be close to home. It has to, because that's where I am right now. And probably for the next 10 years, you're going to find me in my home with my kids and doing homeschooling and doing ministry things, but from my home. And when you have to have big walls and big dogs, there's a limit to how free-flowing that can be.
Hmm.
And I'm looking around at this community, and it's in a sort of farming area where there's a lot of big farms, and there's communities that grow up around that to be the labor force for those farms. One of my friends is a Zambian girl, and she's got a huge heart for lost children who just fall through the cracks and don't get an education. And they're orphans that don't really have a family. They just kind of float around a village. And she and I were walking around in the area, and she was pointing out, like, how much that's an issue in this area. There's no schools. There's no churches. There's no Sunday schools. There's no health clinic.
Mm.
There's no development for the very young moms that you find in these areas. And thinking, I can't fix all of those things, but I could start a Sunday school, just 30 minutes once a week. You know, I could offer first aid classes to communities. There's a lot of ways that we can interact there with people in a way that we're limited in our current situation. Because the safety constraints and the neighborhood constraints are so extreme. So I'm really excited to see what God has, because the one thing we never wanted to do was be to run away from a situation that God had put us in. You know, it took us probably 2 years to decide, did God bring ministry to our door, and we need to embrace that and trust that His care and protection and provision and grace is there, or is God using this to move us to whatever He has next? And I very much have been asking God for that confirmation, because I don't want to be a Jonah. I don't want to get chucked into the ocean for having moved. I'm like, God, just lay it all out for me. Tell me what you want me to do. And just this last week, we've been able to get some help for our special needs child, and somebody said, this kid needs space and independence.
Mm.
This child will thrive if you can get them outside and get them alone time, and this could be hugely beneficial for this child. And I realized, this is the track God has us on. So it might not be amazing writing on the wall or golden tapestries, but for me as a mom, where it's, you know, everything revolves around my kids, having someone give confirmation of you're struggling with developmental issues, what you need is space and a bit more freedom and security and safety, and here God is already providing this years ahead of time, that the chain of events would just fall together as they are. That's what I needed.
Mm.
You know, I think Tim had figured things out and was moving ahead, and I was still back like, I don't know, are we... So it's really helpful for me to know that for our family, for our children, for our ministry, for financial reasons, that that God is in this, and it's not just some crazy idea. Also, I hate moving, so there was a part of me that was like, really? Do you know how long it takes to pack up Barbies and Legos? It takes 3 months just to move.
I really like two things that you mentioned. You said, I can't fix all of those things, but I could do a Sunday school, and I could do this. And I love the focus on just not feeling like needing to be the superhero in the situation and change everything, but to say, okay, what has God given me to do? And I also love how you, earlier you mentioned that there's pastors who are leading churches but not feeding their children, and you and Tim are being an example of faithfulness. That's really cool.
Yeah, and a lot of that comes from Tim. I think, you know, he's been out there for 20 years, and he's gotten pretty good at figuring out that this is his passion, this is his career, and it's had its ups and its downs, but he's worked out that you can't live in high gear if you're going to be long-term. It doesn't matter if you're a missionary or a mom or a doctor or whatever, you can't always be in go mode. And I'm a go mode person. I'm like, point me in the direction and shoot me that way and we'll just keep going. And then eventually, you know, you crash down. So I really appreciate that the head of our family is someone who wants to be productive in the field long term, you know, and is looking at that even at our children, that if we stayed in a situation that's not tenable for them, that would affect our long term. And, you know, that goes into if you attack every problem, it's so easy as a missionary to see all the fires springing up around you and to think, I can put all these out. Because a lot of times, you know, we do have skills that we could share. Like, I can counsel this person and I can teach that person about nutrition and I can run over there and do something on domestic violence and I can help at the HIV clinic and I can, and there's all the different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I think ultimately our children, our marriage, and our own sanity is the biggest loser in that situation. It's just, and we're all there. You know, I'm saying this now and probably 2 weeks from now I'll realize I've taken on way too much and need to listen to my own advice.
And we're so proud of Tim for having figured out how to stay in the field for a long time and having been there 20 years. And it's really cool to see the fruit that just staying and being faithful has brought in the villages and in Kabwe where you guys are serving. So thank you for... thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your heart with us. And we just really appreciate you.
We're really thankful for ITMI. You know, we absolutely couldn't do what the work, you know, everyone calls it the work, the ministry. We couldn't do those things if people weren't praying for us, they weren't supporting, we need senders and prayers. We can't bring change to Zambia if we don't have the time and the financial ability and the spiritual strength. So that's huge that ITMI is connecting us with people who have the prayer or the finance or the capacity to visit. So we're very thankful for that.
Well, we are so glad that you were with us today. Really, financial and prayer supporters are the reason our partners are freed up to reach into the unique places where God has them and share the good news. And all of that work happens because people like you, followers of Jesus, are standing with them emotionally, spiritually, and financially. We hope that you were blessed and inspired by what you heard today. And ITMI is always interested in hearing from you. If you have something you'd like to share with us, if you'd like to get in touch with us, you could do that in lots of different ways. You can call our office, you can message us on Facebook, or you can shoot us an email at intouchmission@intouchmission.org. See you next time.